Hey guys, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Can you imagine growing up in complete fear of your stepfather?
But then sometimes she'd be at work or away or out with the baby, and he'd be home with us, his non-children. And he'd do stuff. He'd poke my hand with a knife at the dinner table. And when I would complain or cry, he'd say, "You want me to do that to your mom?"
How was a small child supposed to handle this?
This is what you do when another fight happens. You run. You call the police. You don't try to save mommy. Mommy's going to be fine. Mommy's strong. You run, you hide. If it happens in the hallway, you hide in your closet. If it happens in the front of the house, you run out a window, etc. Like, we had exit points, you know?
Today on Storyworthy, we hear a heart-wrenching story about domestic abuse from writer Adrienne Earhart. Stick around for her story, "The Day I've Had Enough of This Shit." Stay close.
Hi, this is Adrienne Earhart, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. I am so glad you guys tuned in today, whether you've been a listener for 7 years and a longtime fan of the show, or you're a brand new listener to Storyworthy, welcome. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week with comedian Anna Vecchino, and here's what happened. I'm just going to break it down. If you didn't hear it, here's what happened. Anna took some ecstasy, and then she got knocked up, and she was only 25 years old. So what happened after that? Well, you gotta go back and listen. But not today. Today you guys are here with me, and you guys are tuned in for a fabulous episode. Now I'm here with a talented comedian, writer, linguist, and cannabis professional, Adrienne Earhart. And she brings forth the topic, "The Day I'd Had Enough of This Shit." The day I'd had enough of this shit. It's funny, because when she first sent that topic over, I thought about asking her to be more specific, right? I mean, it obviously has to do with, like, being at the end of a rope, and I believe domestic violence, right? So at first I thought, you know, we should put domestic violence in the title episode. But then I thought, no, actually, "The Day I'd Had Enough of This Shit" is, like, the perfect title. I mean, when somebody gets to the end of their rope, I mean, that's the day they have enough of this shit. So it's actually a perfect title. So I'm really excited to talk to her about this. She's obviously a survivor. You guys know I love survivors. And so I really want to jump into this domestic violence issue. Now, I never had anything like that happen to me. I've never experienced domestic violence. And so I can't address it from that point of view. But I will say there are two books, or one book and one show, that come to mind when I think of domestic violence. And the first was the book called Rose Matter by Stephen King. And I'm telling you guys, if you have never read this book, Rose Matter, it is so unbelievable. I think it's from the late 80s. And it starts off when this woman in the book basically says, you know, "This is the day I've had enough of this shit." You know, she's saying the same thing. And it starts off with her seeing a drop of blood on the pillow. And, you know, that was like her breaking point. It's from 1995, actually. I just looked it up. Anyway, so in this book, the wife who's been beaten for years and years and years, you know, she's finally had enough and she leaves. And then that's when the whole story picks up and the chase, right? Because her husband is not going to let her go that easy. So it's just, it's extremely gory and violent and so entrenching. And I remember reading this book, Rose Matter, when I was a flight attendant. I was on a layover in Philadelphia. And I remember sitting in the airport and there was so much going on. You know, there's just thousands of people going back and forth, back and forth. And I'm sitting there with this book, Rose Matter. And I'm like, holy shit, man, if you guys knew what I was reading right now. I mean, it's that compelling. So anyway, I thought of that book when she brought up this topic. And then I also thought of the recent series Big Little Lies on HBO with Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman and all those fabulous actresses. That woman, you know, Nicole Kidman, she plays a character who is beaten, domestically abused. And I remember sitting here one night with my friend and he said, you know, we're watching the show and it's at one particular moment where, you know, he slaps her across the room. And my friend says, "Now, why wouldn't she just leave? Right then, right there, why wouldn't she just leave?" You know, and I think that a lot of people wonder that, and I wonder that, but I've, you know, read enough and I know enough about psychology to realize it's obviously not that simple. I even know from just breaking up in a regular relationship where maybe there's a little mental abuse going on. I mean, I know how hard that can be, but physical abuse, I really don't know much more about it. Been doing this show, 450 episodes, you guys, and we've never talked about it. So this is exciting.
And here's something else I'm excited about. Sunbasket. Adrian, have you heard of this? Sunbasket is a new meal delivery service that I am just loving. There's nothing better after a hectic day than knowing that you have a fresh, healthy meal to create for your family. Now, the other night I made grilled chicken breasts with salsa verde and white bean salad, and it was fantastic. My daughter Alabama loved it, I loved it, and not only that, I felt good about it. Do you know what I mean? Because Sunbasket ingredients are organic and they don't contain GMOs. Everything's pre-measured and ready to go, so an entire meal takes less than 30 minutes to prepare. Plus, you can choose from all sorts of diets, like gluten-free, lean and clean, vegetarian options, even paleo. And if you go to sunbasket.com/storyworthy right now, you'll get 50% off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/storyworthy, and you'll get 50% off your first order. Sunbasket.com/storyworthy. You guys won't believe how well you can cook.
All right, you guys, before we get to Adrian's story, I did want to remind you guys to follow me on Twitter @storyworthy. And Adrian, by the way, if you're not already following her, you should be, because she is damn funny on Twitter. And that's at Craydrian, CraydrienNE. Also, you guys can follow me, of course, on Instagram @storyworthy. And why not head over to the Storyworthy website and join the mailing list? You know I keep hammering this home, you guys. And you know why? Because I write better and better letters. I shit you not. You are going to love being on my mailing list, so get over there and do that right now. And if you guys really love Storyworthy, you never want to miss an episode, so subscribe on Apple Podcasts, because that really helps me out. And you know when you hear me talk about, you know, the supporters of the show and the ads that I do? Don't skip through those, okay? When you skip through those, I don't get paid. Listen to me, and it will be over before you know it. Do you know what I mean? It's all good, right? It's me and you. Yeah? Yeah. All right, you guys, Adrienne Earhart's here right now. She is a former dancer and a linguist and a writer and a comedian, and she started doing stand-up comedy after an arrest for marijuana. So that's sort of interesting. It must have been like another sort of a breaking point. We'll have to talk about that. And now she lives here in Los Angeles, and she says that tragedy plus time equals comedy. And I think I've heard that before. And now she's got a lot of stuff to say, and she's on stage, and she's doing all sorts of podcasts, and you should definitely follow her, like I said, on Twitter, @Craydrian. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Adrian Earhart.
My story actually involves my childhood. So it's domestic violence as a kid, which, as we all know, forms who you are as a person at a young age. And I actually have found a place where I now feel lucky that I went through it, and for everything that happened. I'm so grateful, not just because when I'm talking with other comedians, I can hang and I can say dark stuff and there's solidarity there. And then some people actually tell me they're jealous of my dark story because I have so much material to work with. So that's kind of a sick comic thing, but you know, I'm proud of it. I wear it like a badge of honor. I don't necessarily talk about it all the time on stage just because it's kind of a bummer, but I've definitely got a couple of domestic violence jokes that I pepper in there just because I think that we should all be talking about it a lot more. And if I can make light of it and get my hair highlighted, then you can laugh at it and be okay with it too. So this is my story. This is one day when I was 8 years old, when I decided I'd had enough of this shit. I had a single mom and an older brother, and we were living real happy in a little bit north of Los Angeles for a few years. And then my mom, who's a software programmer, met my now stepfather, next ex-stepfather, on the internet in 1990. And he turned out to be a psychopath. So if you're thinking this is a new phenomenon, this online dating meeting psychopaths, no, they've been there since the beginning of internet. So they met on the internet when I was away, and then I came home back to California to find that my mom had this boyfriend. And When I say he looks like a villain, like, I couldn't have painted a more villainous picture of a human being. He was stocky, long black hair to his waist, one blue eye, one green, a little gap in his teeth, and he was missing his leg from the left knee down. He was an amputee. Not that that's necessarily scary in and of itself, but as a picture, we're talking pirate vibes big time here. And which, by the way, these traits on another human, like his daughter, my sister, it's beautiful. The black hair and the porcelain skin and the blue-green eyes is beautiful. So this is just him. The villainous vibe is all reserved for him. And, you know, we were a happy little family for a while, and then my sister came along. And by that time, my parents, you know, my mom and stepdad were married, and we were the three of us. But I didn't know that shortly before the marriage, the violence started. I didn't know so much of what was happening to my mother behind closed doors. I just knew that the vibe started to change, and it started to be an aura of fear in the house constantly. After the baby was born, she was the prime focus. Anytime there was a cacophony of sound in the house, I was always trying to get the baby out or just with me. And, you know, they get smart, men, when they're trying to control a woman. And it was easier then. There was no internet technically there was internet. They met on the internet. But there weren't, like, websites with self-help groups and places you could go for safety. And the cops didn't ever believe you. And it was a buddy-buddy system. And when a cop would show up and my stepdad would say, oh, she's crazy. It was a fight back and forth. I was defending myself. Can't I defend myself? You know? So there were many times when he wasn't arrested, which is really frustrating. Really, really frustrating. It's different now. I remember one time my mom managed to escape the house in the middle of the night and ran to the donut shop around the corner. And that's where she found cops at 3 o'clock in the morning. She knew exactly where to go. They were there. They helped us out. So I'm pro cop these days because of their help in my life, for sure. But this particular day, so I've kind of set the tone for you as regards to what it was like then. I was instructed by my mother to stop interfering in fights because I would get flung across the room and hurt badly. And then that distracts her, and then she can't get out, et cetera, et cetera. So we'd had these little powwows, us against him. This is what you do when another fight happens. You run. You call the police. You don't try to save mommy. Mommy's going to be fine. Mommy's strong. You run, you hide. If it happens in the hallway, you hide in your closet. If it happens in the front of the house, you run out a window, et cetera. Like, we had exit points, you know? She had a plan all along for how to get out. And I knew she would. She's the smartest person I've ever met in my life. I knew we would get out. So I had that from her. But then sometimes she'd be at work or away or out with the baby, and he'd be home with us, his non-children. And he'd do stuff. He'd poke my hand with a knife at the dinner table. And when I would complain or cry, he'd say, "You want me to do that to your mom?" So I didn't tell her that that was happening. And he'd, you know, I'd be babysitting my sister, and he'd call me from the room. And sometimes he'd call me over to hug me. Sometimes he'd call me over to whack me upside the head. Sometimes he'd call me over and just make a move at me so I'd flinch. So we're just talking, like, just straight up 100% fear all the time, you know? And at this point, I'm lost. I can't protect anyone. All I'm told to do is escape. And then he sits me down one day after he's been arrested a couple times at this point. And he says, "You know, if you call the police again, they're going to separate us all. And you're never going to see your mom or your brother or your sister again. That's what happens when you call the police. That's going to happen." And I believed him. I 100% believed him. So I've got that in my head. And then my best friend's mom factors into this, because she, not an idiot, had a feeling she knew what was going on. There were some times when my mom would pick me up from a hangout and wouldn't leave her car because she had a hat and glasses on. Or, like, in person, you can see bruising, you know? So that, like, people were knowing a little bit. And this woman had said to me, "If you ever need anything, you call me. I'll come get you." So this is all going on in my head this day that this horrible fight starts. I think it was a Saturday morning. And I woke up to just the most horrible sounds you can hear. Your mom screaming in pain, you know? And I'm standing in the doorway and I'm watching this happening. He's going hard on her, and I can hear the baby crying, and I don't know where she is. I don't know if she's in her room. I don't know if she's across the house. I don't know if I can get to her and get her out. So I'm standing there trying not to be seen by him, because sometimes if I would distract him and he came after me, then my mom got 10 times more hurt trying to defend me. So I just tried to stay out of sight. I'm standing there in my little underwear I think it was strawberry shortcake underwear and a little t-shirt, trying to decide what to do, and then they move, and I turn a corner and go into my brother's room, because we always had a plan, we'll get out together, we'll fix stuff, you know? And this little asshole had left his Legos all over the fucking floor. So we're trying to navigate through those screams happening. I can hear the baby crying. I'm trying to tiptoe across Legos out the window. He's got the window open already, and he's ready to boost me out. So he boosts me out. The last minute, he grabs his blanket from the bed. He's also in an underwear and t-shirt. And we run next door and ask if we can use their phone. I'm sure they can hear the screaming. They're like, yes, of course. And it's time to call. And my brother pawns it off on me. He says, you do it. You go to the kitchen and you make the call. And I'm standing there looking at the phone. This is, you know, phone on the wall with a long cord hanging from it. Not real 90s style. And I have all these thoughts going through my head. Mom says, call the police. Stepdad says, they'll separate us if you do. Friend's mom says, she'll come help. So I did what any dumb 8-year-old would do. And I called my friend. And her mom answered. And I know that I wasn't crying. I was stony. And I said, you said to call if I need you. And she goes, do you need me to come get you right now? And I said, yes. And she said, where are you? And I said, the house next door with the golden retriever. And she said, I'll be right there. With your brother? Yes. With your sister? No. And then there was a silence. And she was like, okay, don't move. I'll be right there. And I hang up the phone. And I'm in my neighbor's kitchen in my little underwear, just, thank you. Can I sit on your couch? And they were like, sure. So I sit on the couch. And I'm just waiting for this woman to come pick us up. And then I hear it's louder next door. So my brother and I run back outside and we stand in the driveway. And my mom comes tearing out with the baby. My mom is as messed up looking as you can possibly look. And I remember just being so angry because my grandmother had just sent her this beautiful outfit that she'd made. She'd zhuzhed it up with like sponge paint and like sparkles, like real 90s style. And it was just torn to shreds and my mom was all busted up or whatever. And she comes running out and she basically throws the baby. I think she's one at this point. Throws a baby in my arms and says, did you call the police? And I said, no, I called my friend's mom. And she goes, oh, and she just runs next door to the police, to go call the police next door. So I'm standing in the driveway. I've got my little sister in my arms, my brother next to me. He's put the blanket over both of our shoulders at this point because we're standing in the middle of the street in our underwear, basically. And I see blood on my sister's face. And I just remember taking my shirt and just wiping it. She was calm as can be, just staring, just waiting for mom to come back. And it had turned out that my friend's mom had called my house to ask a question, I guess. And in the middle of beating his wife, my stepdad stopped and answered the phone. This is how important phone calls were in the 90s. I feel like this happened today. Nobody would stop, first of all, anything. Even if they're sitting there doing nothing, they won't answer the phone. And he stops hitting her to go answer the phone. My friend's mom keeps him distracted on the phone just long enough for my mom to grab the baby and dip out. So that's how that happened. I was wondering, how did she get out? How did this happen? You know, because he's strong. There's no way she can overpower him. I've stolen his leg before and he'll still get you. You know, he's a hopper, that one. And I know. So we're standing in the driveway and then, you know, the cops show up and they go into the house and my mom's in the driveway now and it's the four of us huddled together, not talking, just kind of just staring at nothing. And then the cops are questioning her and they're taking pictures of her. And my friend's mom shows up and my mom says, go with her, you and your brother, go with her. I'll see you later. I did not want to leave her very badly at that point. And I say, okay. And at that moment, I see my stepdad being escorted out of the house, hands behind his back, handcuff style. And he's getting in the back of the police car. And I see him turn and look at me, staring daggers, like he thinks it was me that called the cops. And I wanted to be like, I didn't even have the guts to do it. I didn't. I failed. I failed today. I called my friend's mom like a stupid idiot kid. You know, you hear about these hero kids all the time. I'm beating myself up for 20 years about this. I failed my family. My mom almost fucking died because I didn't just call the police because I let a man manipulate me, you know? And it was that moment I locked eyes with him in the back of that car, holding my sister, covered with blood on her face. And I was just like, I have had enough of this shit. I am not scared anymore. I want this guy to die. I want this guy to go to jail forever. I want my family safe. I'll do whatever I have to do, you know? And it was that day that a female cop came up to my mom and handed her a business card and said,
"Have you had enough of this shit?" and wrote a phone number on the back of the card. And it was a phone number for a battered woman shelter, which was step one in us escaping. All in all, I think it was less than 3 years of this nightmare together. My mom got us out pretty fast. She's brilliant. You know, she's a software programmer, so she wasn't hurting for work. And we had a couple weird, you know, battered woman shelter experiences. Nothing, you know, horrible happened there. It's just kind of weird to be there. And then we finally escaped. And, I, you know, I didn't want to leave my home in California and everything, but it was her that said, "We can get away from him. The judge granted us, you know, we can leave. We can go to Pacific Northwest and start over." And I said, "Yeah, I've had enough of this. Let's leave and start over and try to be safe." And that day really changed me to my core as a person. I'm known as like protective and motherly to all my friends. And I think a lot of them understand why. A lot of them don't really get why. Your safety is my concern, because I failed when I was 8 to protect everyone. And that turned into anger, which is a whole nother topic. Psychedelics have helped me turn that anger into processing this information and dealing with it and trying to, you know, bond with my sister and not resent her for looking like her father. And, you know, there's a whole mess of stuff in there. But basically, that was the day that my little 8-year-old brain saw pure evil look me in the eyes and was like, "I'm going to fight this instead of cower from this." And he's dead. And my family's dope. And now I have a lot of material.
How did he die?
Accidental pain pill overdose because of his amputated leg later on.
Like opioids or?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Like almost 7 years ago.
How long did he stay in prison after that evening's encounter, that night?
1 day.
1 day. And how does that work? How does that work? They say, I mean, I just don't understand that.
The rules have changed considerably since then, but he, you know, he was able to release bail, and we were able to prove that we were not in the house when he came home, and they were married, and he had custody of his kid as well. So we were legally not allowed to leave. We could stay at a safe haven for a certain amount of time, and then there was an injunction to come home.
Right.
So, and then it was a full year of that. We still lived in California, where he sent thugs to our house all the time, and we had to switch off custody back and forth a bunch. And then eventually she showed his true colors in court one day, and the judge was just like, "Ma'am, you can leave. Take your kids and leave the state."
Did he see his daughter after that?
Never again.
He never saw her after that night.
Well, she never saw him. He followed us everywhere we went.
So the baby, the 1-year-old, he followed and he tried to still see her and he still wanted to be
in
her life.
Yeah. When he died 7 years ago, I was 27, not 6 years ago, I was 27 years old. He had a picture of us as a family in his wallet.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. He must have been a really sad, sad man.
He was.
He messed up big time.
Yes.
Was that in his family? Do you know anything about, you know, in terms of like, that he had obviously had a mental illness of some sort?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, he was mistreated by his mother.
Yeah. Are his parents at all involved in your sister? I'm just wondering, like, what?
No.
She has her mom, your mom, and she has you and your brother. And
that's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
There's just nothing on his
side. It wasn't safe to.
Right. You can't.
She had a grandfather, his father, who was wonderful. And she met him as a toddler when they were still married. But then she didn't get to see him after that. And that's one of our biggest regrets as a family for her. But my grandparents, my father's parents, took her under their wing and sent her birthday cards.
Wonderful.
And things. And she,
yeah.
I don't call her my half sister. She's my sister.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you guys look alike at all?
I look like my dad and she looks like her dad.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Now, how about your mom? Did she get help? What kind of help did she get? She did the battered women's shelter, but now, I mean, that must involve so much therapy for her.
Not so much.
But how do you find yourself in that place?
I can't speak for her,
what
she feels. I can only speak for what it was like for me, but I can tell you we've healed as a unit considerably by being open to talking about it and processing it. And it was actually my therapy 6 years ago after my stepdad died that like opened this flood of emotions. I mourned his loss and I went through EMDR therapy, which is like eye movement desensitization reprocessing.
Interesting.
And it was that process and then talking to her where we learned to forgive each other. You know, I didn't realize that she needed forgiving and she didn't realize that I needed forgiving for failing that day.
That is so beautiful that you guys could come together and make that something where you can go forward now and leave that behind. I can't believe you were 8 years old, man. Adrian, that breaks my heart.
I mean, it's not that uncommon either, you know?
I mean, I have a 10-year-old, mm-hmm. and so she'll do anything I tell her to do.
Yeah.
So when you're 8, you just do what you're told. Mm-hmm. So when you said, you know, he said, don't call the police, I'm thinking, yeah, you wouldn't because you're 8. My daughter would completely listen to me.
Yeah.
She'd do anything I said.
My mom said to call, though. It's interesting that I listened to him over her, but never again.
He gave you, maybe it was a fear thing, you know, because obviously you'd been hurt before physically. How old was he? I'm just curious that night, how old was he?
How old was he? I want to say 38.
God, so young, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then how long, you went to a battered women's shelter. Did he stay in that house?
Yeah.
God damn, right?
Yeah, it took a long time to get him out. And then we ended up living with him a little bit, a few more months after that. And then finally my mom was planning her escape, and we're talking like clandestine shit. Like, I had no idea. My mom is a brilliant woman. And she picked me up from in the middle of school one day, and my brother and I, and we fled to a bad woman shelter in Pacific Northwest. She had to leave the baby because he never let her be alone with all three of us. And she knew if she took the baby and left us, he was 100% going to hurt us, because that's what he does. But if she took us and left the baby, that's his seed, you know, just like a lion pride, his own seed. He's much less likely to. And he didn't hurt her. And it was only a couple days and she got her back.
How did she get her back?
She called him and was like, you know, let's work this out. I'm milking. The baby needs to feed. And he was like, yeah, okay. And she took my brother down there for an orthodontist appointment back down to California. And he tried to stop her as they were leaving. And my brother got to be the hero who called the cops that night. And the cops showed up and said,
oh my God, ma'am, so you get to leave. Story goes on.
I know.
The story goes on. I'm so sorry. So after the night that you decided you'd had enough shit, he goes to jail, but he comes right back home. And you all still live together. Mm-hmm. For how much longer until your mom was able to organize this?
Couple months.
Escape. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And so you had to be with this guy after you had that eye contact with him mm-hmm. in the yard. Mm-hmm. Did you call him dad?
No. I called him Wicked.
Really?
It was a pet name because he had one blue and one green. He looked like this wizard that was in this pewter snow globe that I had. And I called him Wicked because he reminded me of that wizard. And it was a term of endearment. We've since, for 20 years, referred to him as Dickhead.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wicked. That's mm-hmm. totally crazy. And then that peg leg.
Yeah.
Jesus. I mean, this is like the Burning Bed movie. This is like, we got to do Farrah Fawcett movie. That wasn't that. I love that movie, by the way.
Yeah.
That was a wonderful film. But this, I didn't know you were bringing forth this topic. And I never ask story-worthy storytellers to tell me the story ahead of time, because I do want to be surprised. Mm-hmm. And I did think this was going in the direction of you being domestically or physically abused. Mm-hmm. And so this is like a whole nother thing. And that's why I'm kind of taken aback, because I look at my daughter and like, she's never seen anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
If it's even on TV, I turn it off. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if I'm sheltering her. Does she have friends that are going through this? Perhaps. Right?
Yep.
And so do you have any thoughts on what people can do, you know, in terms of just to get the message out, to talk more about it? You know, where's the dialogue start? Because it has to be the woman asking for help, right?
Supposedly. Although a single woman with kids who is attractive, it's hard to get help, especially back then.
Yeah.
I know my mother struggled with that a lot, and it was the kindness of some strangers that helped us. It was, you know, a nice Mormon man lending her a laptop where she ended up writing her software program and is now very successful. It was the kindness of strangers. It was the little people along the way that helped us that don't really get much credit in the grand scheme of things. And to me, those people are much more important than this that happened to us.
So maybe part of what you can share is, as a survivor, is that, you know, I mean, I know I do a lot of, not patting myself on the back, but I do a lot of volunteering and going out of my way, or, you know, trying to help others. And I think that if people just in general do that more, then there would be more refuge for people who do need help.
Yes.
That seems so simple.
Yes.
That seems so, you know, pat to say, you know, just do well, do good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true.
Be an ally.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. If you see something, say something, not to be cliche. And as my grandfather would say, if you want to know what a man's going to do, look at what he's done.
Interesting.
Remember that people don't change drastically at their core.
You know, that's so true across the board. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about, you know, whether it's employers that you've had or, you know, certain, even if it's like casting directors in LA or club managers or talent or people that blow you off, who says they're going to come, who doesn't, who shows up, who doesn't. You know who's not going to bring tennis balls to the court? The guy who never brought tennis balls to the court. So if you think all of a sudden one day he's showing up with balls, you are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, so you're in a battered women's shelter. Could you go to the same school then that you had been going to?
Yes.
That was helpful.
Yes.
Yeah.
My friends were like, where are you? You're not on the street playing handball with us.
And also the fact that there were no cell phones. I mean, that seems so, it seems so archaic now, but yes, you know, when there was no cell phones, everything was just a little trickier.
It was a lot trickier. I don't know how anything got done at all in the 90s. And much less with, I mean, sheer tenacity by my mother got us out of there. This, we're talking cash. She had to squirrel away cash and hide keys and, you know, and pack the car up while my stepfather took a nap, you know?
Can you imagine her thought process when she lay down at night? Like, she probably could not sleep for months, for weeks.
I can't imagine that she could, no.
Yeah.
And she and I are open about this now. I can tell this story, and I just try not to ever speak for her.
Yeah.
Because it's her story, too.
Sure, sure.
But this is my perspective, and
she's a hero, man.
She is.
Now, has she ever done the moth, or has she ever written it down?
She doesn't talk about this.
I'd love to see it first person. Oh, interesting.
No, it's not. She chooses not to have it be something that defines her.
And so you've been doing comedy for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. What kind of domestic violence jokes can you tell on stage? I mean, that seems, it definitely seems like a stretch.
I have a joke about how my last name is Earhart, and I did have a teacher in fourth grade who called me Amelia a lot, and I have a joke about how he would be like, where are your aviators, Amelia? Where's your compass, Amelia? What are all those bruises from, Amelia, when you crash in the Bermuda Triangle? And then I was like, no, they're from my stepdad. And then I get a groan, and then I say, I tell you what, he knew my name, my real name, on those child services forms. Oh. I'm just kidding. No one reported that shit in the 90s. So Jesus. Believe it or not, good. It you gets a laugh.
Yeah, yeah. Because people, if once they're uncomfortable, then they're at the point where you could push them over and they will laugh. You know, so that's a good point to be at. I want to give you this book, by the way, Rose Matter.
Okay.
Just because you say you like Stephen King.
I do.
You like Stephen King.
Yeah.
Do you follow him on Twitter?
I do.
He's a wonderful Twitterer.
I'm a big fan.
And so is his son, yep. Sean King. Yeah, both those guys, right? Okay, so I know that you've been a dancer most of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Was that an escape for you, I wonder?
I think it might have been. I mean, I started before any of this happened. I think I was 2. My mother was a dancer.
Sure,
so
sure.
It's something that we shared. My sister became a dancer. And for sure, you can just shut up and it's just numbers.
And you could totally compartmentalize.
Yep.
And that's with any exercise. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like sometimes the reason why anybody plays a sport so much is because that's their comfort zone.
Yeah.
You know, why does somebody ski constantly or surf constantly? Because that's where they're most comfortable. As I'm on my way to the tennis courts again. But it's true, you know? So for a dancer, that must have been, you know, to have the control that you had to have with all the chaos going on around you probably made you even focus harder.
Yeah. I got some really good training and then got really good, especially at tap, I think because of the numbers and the syncopation. And
can you still tap dance?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a lot of fun. Do you have tap shoes?
Yeah.
You should do that on stage, man. Bring that up.
My mom says that too.
It's very unique. No, but it is. It's very unique.
I do it on my Instagram. You can hop on there and see some syncopations.
I will. Yeah. And what's the and syncopations? That's good.
Yeah.
Hop on there and see some syncopations. You don't hear that every day. And what is the Instagram address?
Craydrian, same as my Twitter.
Craydrian, great. What does it mean, Craydrian? What was that all about?
Adrian, but I'm crazy, I guess. I don't know.
You don't seem crazy.
I was going to get Sladrian because my husband calls me Sladrian. And honestly, it was just taken. So I was just like, Cray. And people were at the time were like, oh, that's Cray. Oh my God, that's Cray.
Sladrian was taken?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. There's someone who doesn't even tweet. I was so mad.
So we got to wrap it up in a second. And I know we could do a whole nother show on this, but you are a cannabis expert.
Yep.
And I would consider myself an expert.
Yeah.
However, I've never been a bud tender.
Okay.
So I think that probably, I don't know as much as I think I know.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're a bud tender, then you see it all.
True.
And I only see what I want. So you know what I mean? That's like saying, oh, I could be a bartender. No, I couldn't because I only have draft beer. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even know anything. Mm-hmm. So can you just tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. I've been a cannabis smoker since I'm like 17. It's been very helpful in these weird thoughts in my head for all my life. And I got arrested when I was 27 in Florida outside of a comedy club. For marijuana.
But you had what on you?
An eighth.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a lot.
It's Florida.
I see.
And I had been thrown in cuffs a bunch of times in Florida, and never arrested, but this, he was training a rookie. And
so he had to make his point.
Yeah, had to make his point. And I was calm and collected and very polite. And I had to defer grad school because of that arrest. But I was on my first date with my now husband. So I, you know, stayed in Florida and went to Mike's to spend time with him and started doing comedy as a result of that, of all of this.
Isn't that interesting?
It was the catalyst.
These epiphanies come, these turns in life come, and you think you're going to grad school and no, you're not. You're going to marry a comedian in Florida. And then when did you get to L.A.?
We came to L.A. 4 years ago.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So we came together after like a year and a half of dating. And then a couple years ago, after doing some psychedelics, decided to get married. Got married in this past April in my mom's backyard in
How
Vegas.
Lovely.
It was gorgeous.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's very... You're newlyweds, really.
Newlyweds, yep.
And so what happened with that arrest in Florida? I just want to know the acting.
I just had to do a one-day class and go to court, and they dropped the charges.
Of course they did. What was the class?
It was class one misdemeanor. I had
No, but what was... You had to take a class?
Oh, what was the class like? It was some old dude who you can tell had been doing like AA stuff, you know, and he ended up... He was so lazy that he ended up having me like pass out all the forms and teach the class for that day. I was like, really? Can't you tell that I'm using marijuana as like
was
a helpful aid?
It was pretty funny.
Yeah. And it was all day and it was super annoying and it's fine. I'm glad you got it behind you. Yeah.
And your husband must have gotten a laugh out of it. I mean, you just met him and this happened.
Well, I didn't rat him out. I said it was my stuff because it was. Wow. Yeah. And he was like, first date, you're a down ass bitch. He's like, I knew. He mentioned it in our vows. He's like, I knew you were the one, you know?
To get arrested on your first date. That's really, really funny.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of cannabis myself. Mm-hmm. And it's just, there's so much to know about it. And so you go out and you actually talk with groups of people and you educate people.
I do.
There's just so much to learn. It's like going to a wine tasting, but you'd learn like 20 times more than that.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
And do you know what I mean?
And you can consume more of this without getting loopy like you can with wine. So yeah. I'm a fan.
And then the other thing that I love about marijuana is like I didn't have it for about 2 weeks because, so of course I have my stupid card that you have to have in California, but I really have a problem giving these stupid doctors $30, $40 to get renewed because their doctor's not even present. Recently I got my card renewed down at Doc 420. There's not even a doctor present. You just go to the guy at the counter and you fill out this form and he goes, okay, the doctor's going to call you momentarily and you'll talk to the doctor, then come back to the desk. So my phone rings and I look down and it's a 609 number. I don't know anybody in 609, so I don't answer it. And then they call back and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I think that there's a doctor. So then you say hello and they say, oh, yes, this is Dr. So-and-so. And I understand you were trying to get your medical marijuana card. And can you tell me any of your symptoms? And I say, yeah, I feel anxious. He goes, okay, thank you so much for coming in. See, the receptionist behind you. And then you give him $30 and... But the point is because I've had like a weed guy in my life for like the last 3-4 years and he's this little Russian guy and I've been friends with him for, you know, as you are friends with a weed guy.
Yeah.
Okay. And his name is Eric and he's the nicest guy and he loves my cat and, you know, he comes over and we chat, we hang out, have a glass of iced tea. Then he leaves 4 years, right? About 5 months ago, he tells me about this new business he's starting, and he's writing it on a piece of paper where I can find it on Weed Maps. And then he writes down his name, and he writes Andrew. And I go, what's this? What's Andrew? Who's Andrew? And he goes, oh, it's my name.
What?
I said, what are you talking about? I've been calling you Eric for 4 years. He goes, oh, no, no, I know, Christine, but I think you like this name. So I say, okay. Oh. I said, wait a minute. Your name is Andrew. He's like, yes, yes, but it's okay. You call me Eric.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, oh, my God. This is so... Anyway, recently, Eric Andrew, he ghosted. And, you know, I was without pot for about 2 weeks. No worries. No big deal. It's not like, you know, you have to have it. And then I had to go get the license. And now I'm back in the, you know, there's just so many choices now in California. So I went to a couple of new dispensaries recently. And it really is nice to, like, walk into a store as an adult and make choices and just be normal and not be so secretive and on the down low.
Yeah, I'm a fan. Big time.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
I'm super happy to have met you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
An amazing story. Really. Thank amazing. You. All right, you guys. I got to wrap it up right now. I want to thank you guys again so much for tuning in today. Let Adrienne know that you like her story and tweet her over at Cradrian and tell her that you loved it, right? And then, of course, you follow me over there at Storyworthy, yada, yada, yada. And join us next week on Storyworthy for writer Molly McAleer.
I'm going to meet up with him at 6:30, have a drink or two, go home. But before I left, I was like, you know what? I already don't care about him, and I'm just going to meet my friends later, so I'm going to eat a weed gummy.
Don't miss Molly McAleer from Hello Giggles next week on Storyworthy. All right, you guys, I want to thank everybody over at Wondery Media, including Hernan Lopez and Jeffrey Glazer. And once again, on behalf of the lovely Adrian Earhart, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it the Storyworthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.